Welcome to The Dreaming. I'm Sasha Smulders.
I'm Joel Fulgen. This is The Sandman, Issue 60, The Kindly Ones, Part 4. Let's start off with where we normally do the cover. This is Silk Keys Photography and Macintosh. These keys were actually bought as props for Mr. Punch, which is another Neil Gaiman, Dave McKean project that they worked on.
Mr. Punch?
Yeah, Mr. Punch. I have a copy of it if you'd like to read it.
Huh, what's it about?
It's kind of, I think it's Neil's recollections of spending times on this English beach where there were, and also it's crossed with Punch and Judy shows. It's been a while since I've read it.
All right.
It's good. It's like kind of depressing personal memoirs, Brighton Beach. Well, Brighton Beach memoirs is funnier. It's good. It's interesting. I have to reread it. It's been a while.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the childhood memories of a narrator.
I think
a lot of it might be Neil's.
Okay.
But it's paralleled with the traditional story of the Mr. Punch show.
I don't know what the Mr. Punch show is.
Punch and Judy is a traditional, popular, and usually violent puppet show featuring Pulcinella, Mr. Punch, and his wife Judy. The performance consists of a sequence of short scenes, each depicting an interaction between two characters, most typically Mr. Punch and one other character who usually falls victim to Mr. Punch's club. It is often associated with British culture. The various episodes of Punch comedy, often provoking shocked laughter, are dominated by the clowning of Mr. Punch.
Okay.
So it's a puppet show that's put on in a little, you know, one of those little
box.
Stages,
yeah.
Box stages that you'd be on.
I can definitely picture like the idea of like of two puppets in a box, and then one is like screaming at the other and beating it and hitting it. Like that's definitely something that is like imprinted in my mind. I just didn't know what it was a reference to, but like I feel like I've seen that in pop culture a lot of two puppets in a box and one is like violently beating the other one. And so we've got the keys up in the top. There's a ribbon that runs through the image.
Mm-hmm.
It appears to have writing on it, but it's indecipherable for me.
Yeah.
And then there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 figures who are sort of in shrouds or whatever, kind of looking up with their hand out. I don't know who the figures are supposed to be.
Yeah. Are they praying? Is that a praying pose? I think that's what that is, isn't it?
Maybe.
What do you think that's about?
Well, they only ever talked about one key.
We do kind of have 5 sort of scenes in the inside here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got the Remiel visits Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
We have the beginning of Hippolyta's quest, where she goes off and meets the different things. We have a scene with Rose Walker. We find out how she's involved here. And then the scene continues with Hippolyta meeting the Gorgons. And then we see Dream create a new nightmare. That's 5. I mean, that might be pushing it. What that might mean is each of these kind of scenes, I know that you commented before we started, not a lot happens in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But it does seem that each of them are kind of, each of the things that's happening in this is preparing for more to come.
Yeah, we so learned something new in each of these 5 scenes too.
Maybe that's what's going on. But also each of these keys is over top of one of these, I think it's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So they're floating over their heads. Maybe they're balancing them.
Hmm.
I'm not sure.
Interpretive art is interpretive.
Yeah. Okay, let's get inside.
Yeah. We start out with an angel.
Can be a little difficult to tell here, I find, but he's not touching the ground.
Oh, you're right. He's only noticed that he was barefoot.
He's barefoot, but he's actually also floating. And also there is that cable continuing the thread motif in the first panel of every one of these.
Yeah, so he's, I only noticed he was an angel because he used a script talk.
Right.
He's got angel talk.
Yeah, well, we've seen this angel before.
Yeah.
This is Remiel. He gets named on the next page over.
Yeah, he's one of the angels who has inherited hell alongside Duma, the quiet one.
Yep. And he's come to Lux looking for Lucifer.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to talk to him about something. He gets shown in. makes a joke. The early bird catches the worm, Star of Morning. The worm that dieth not in this case, that is a reference to Mark chapter 9, verses 43 to 48. It's the line, if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than having your two hands to go to hell and into the unquenchable fire. And then it says, where the worm dies not and the fire is not quenched. And that phrase is actually repeated several times in the King James Version. In other versions, it's not in the first two, but only in the third. But again, it's a thing where it's like, blah, 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 hell, where the worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. So it's a thing about hell and there being a thing, a worm there that doesn't die.
See, I just like that whole thing about taking personal responsibility to not do bad things. Cut off your own hand so you don't sin with both hands.
Oh, yeah, it's totally good, right? It's, if your eye causes you to stumble, throw it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than having two eyes to be cast into hell. That's the whole women need to dress modestly because men can't help but look, coming from a conservative Christian right, makes no sense. Because it says clearly right here, if you can't help but ogle women who are dressed that way, you're going to have to blind yourself.
Yeah.
Now, my advice would be to do that by looking away.
Yeah.
Rather than literally ceasing the use of your eyes. I think you should try things like perhaps blinders and moving your head in a different direction. Or growing the hell up.
Yeah.
That could be a thing.
Yeah, I think growing the hell up might be the best option.
Right. Okay, rant over.
Thanks, Bible.
Thanks, Bible. So Lucifer, he kind of claims to not know what's going on. He asks some questions. Oh, so you're in charge of the old haunts, eh? Like, as if he doesn't know. Right.
I mean, that's the thing, is he's goading Remiel to do different things here. So like he's saying you're in charge in order to make Remiel admit that he shares it with Duma.
Yeah.
And then he brings up that Duma must make him drive him mad that he just sits there, that he's also the one who holds the key, the actual powerful thing. And then he just sits there and makes him do everything. And he doesn't let Remiel respond. Right. So like he basically he does the thing where he says something super inflammatory and then doesn't let the other person respond.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of my business.
Masterful in-person trolling.
Yeah.
Here. Right? He gets it right out of him. Oh, he gets him to mention Duma. And then he goes, oh, and you probably can't shut him up. He's probably just brimming over with co-monarchical advice, knowing that Remiel is going to be having problems and wishes that Duma could say something to help. Like, he knows where that little wound to pick is because he's Lucifer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He even, like, catches himself. The next page over, panel one. No, forget I said it. That's none of my business. There's so much good in the worst of us and all that.
Well, what he does is he takes away Remiel's chance to deny that, too. That yeah. Right? Like, that's what he's doing, is he gets to say something inflammatory and then by immediately saying it's not my business, he takes away Remiel's ability to like deny that he's feeling that way.
Totally,
or
right.
Like that's totally a manipulative thing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It leaves him with the assumption that he's right, which he is right, but
he is right. Yeah. But he wants it to hurt. He wants him being right to hurt because he's Lucifer.
His messy hair appears to be little horns.
Yeah, I love that. He gets the little horn hair. And Remiel's really excited about his refining fire project. And Lucifer's literally yawning. Of course they must. And what an exciting and innovative opinion yours must be. What a sweet idea.
Yeah.
It's like, I've been in charge of hell forever. You think I didn't try that? Come on.
Right.
Goads him into basically asking him to come back.
Yeah.
So you aren't sitting around there going, oh, if only Lucifer would come and take it back, right? Makes him ask.
Yeah, he does make
and
him
ask. And he like, looks down at his finger, it's that fake casual, looking at my finger, just going to very casually ask, have you ever thought about returning?
And then just this full laugh.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So from this like full nude shot of Lucifer, are we supposed to assume that he's also like a Ken doll, like the other angels?
I think so, yeah. There's no bit there. Although it's Lucifer, if he wants a bit there, he'll probably have a bit there.
Yeah.
But I think his natural state is no bits. That's how the angels work.
Been there, Remiel, done that. Wore the t-shirt, ate the burger, bought the original cast album, choreographed the Legions of the Damned, and orchestrated the screaming.
Now, Morningstar, really, be honest.
Honesty is a somewhat overrated virtue, Remiel. Honesty, for example, would compel me to admit that I have never liked you. And when I was an angel, I didn't like you. Also, I never respected you.
And now we learn about Remiel.
Yeah, so Remiel never joined him in the rebellion. But he possibly wanted to?
Yeah.
He was just too afraid?
He was a coward. Kind of agreed, yeah, this sucks, but I'm going to just keep doing what God says, I guess.
Yeah. What would you have done had I won? Told me that you'd always supported me ideologically? That you were secretly cheering me on the whole time?
Tell me, Remiel, what did you do when the order came for you to spread your wings and reign in hell? Did you whimper? Did you wail? Somehow, I confess I find myself certain that Duma was the one actually to take the key. Duma always struck me as having some backbone.
So he literally knows what happened.
He totally knows.
He just described exactly what happened.
Yeah, he's pretending not to go, oh, it's obvious because that makes it even more of a personal hit on you.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Gets the spit, points out, I'm still really, really powerful, dude.
We could make him no longer exist, yeah. But he chooses not to.
And that is a reference to Sir Walter Raleigh, who was apparently challenged by a young courtier one time who spat in his face, challenged him to a duel, but he didn't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He said, young man, if I could wipe your blood from my conscience as easily as I can wipe the spittle from my face, you should not live an hour.
Ah. So he says, like, basically, I'm choosing not to kill you.
Yeah.
I would kill you easily.
Yeah.
But I'm choosing not to.
I'm only not killing you because I would feel bad to kill you.
Mm. I really like how when Remiel's rejected and he leaves, his suit no longer appears white, but gray.
Oh, you're right. It was full bright in most of them, but yeah.
Yeah, it's looked like sparklingly white in pretty almost every scene. Like, it has some gray over it and some, but usually it's fairly white. And when he's leaving, it just looks very gray.
And again, people don't like Mark Hempel's art. A lot of people don't. I know a lot of people are saying they didn't at first and now they love it, which is great. I've loved it since the start. Like the shot where Remiel is just outlined, the first panel on page 6 there. You can barely see any detail, but you know what's going on with that character with his hand up to his mouth. And then especially panel 2 there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and again, his eye is just a dot. His eyebrow is just a line with a hook in it. And it's all there. Like, I love Hempel's art.
Yeah, no, this is my favorite art of any of these that we've read so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
So he jumps through his little rainbow teleporter and ends up back on what could only be described as the top of a Hitachi magic wand vibrator.
Yeah. Well, living for thousands of years as a Ken doll might actually give you some pretty massive penis envy. And it might come out, let's just say, architecturally.
So, like, what's the excuse for all the men in the world who've done all the architecture that looks like dicks while they had dicks?
They wish their dicks were as big as those towers.
Oh, cool. Okay, I get it. Awesome. Good. Makes sense.
It's just a bigger penis envy, that's all.
Mm. Okay. And we do see here that Doom is wearing the key around his neck.
Yeah, and just lounging. Just lying on a chaise lounge, not saying anything. And what else do we learn?
Oh, that that Remiel actually went there to talk to him about the Dream King situation, but
yeah.
Lucifer got him so riled up, probably on purpose,
yeah.
So he never got to talk about it.
Oh, yeah, that could be.
Because he doesn't want to talk about it. So, if he knows everything that's going on, possibly, he probably got him so riled up so that he would leave, so that they would never have to talk about it.
I'm unconvinced that it was on purpose yet. Like, I almost feel like there may be a force making it so that that happened so they didn't talk about the Dream King situation.
Okay.
I don't think it was necessarily Lucifer that did it. Do you know what I'm saying? It felt more like it was Lucifer's nature that was to happen.
Okay.
Rather than Lucifer deciding, I will piss him off so he won't talk to me about it.
Mm.
Because if he didn't want to talk to him about it, or if he didn't care about the Dream King situation, he would just say, I don't care about the Dream King situation.
Mm.
Right? Whereas if like the instinctive trolling of somebody he doesn't like makes Lucifer not talk to him about an important thing, that's kind of a tragedy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
That maybe in some other world without some other influence, that didn't happen.
Mm.
And then things maybe ended up different.
We get to our title page, The Kindly Ones,
the 4. The Kindly Ones, 4. And the credits here, Neil Gaiman, of course, the writer, cover by Dave McKean, Mark Hempel's the penciler, Disraeli is the inker, Daniel Vazzo and Android Images both did the coloring, Karen Berger is the editor, Todd Klein as the letterer, and Shelley Bond as the associate editor. Cover date for this issue is June of 1994, and it was in stores on April 26th of 1994.
So Lita is walking through in this, you see that she's in two places at once. She's walking through two worlds, through the dirty underbelly of LA.
Mm-hmm.
It's all in gray. And then on the other side, what looks to be a kind of magical, almost like a desert, you know, like this cactus does not look like a regular cactus. And there's a lizard watching her and stuff.
Which I guess is LA's natural form, right?
Well, maybe,
If the city wasn't there, that would probably be a desert and have lizards.
Because at some point she does talk about how she's going to Greece, where she's from, but because she's starting in LA, I think maybe that's why it looks like that to begin with. That makes sense, yeah.
And she starts to encounter kind of fairy tale type characters, myth characters.
So we don't have this person's name.
I don't know who this this person is, no.
But they talk about their love. But, oh no, but they don't actually mention anyone's names.
No, just, I cannot, my true love's imprisoned in a high tower and I have to set him free. She's just an adventurer maiden wanting to rescue her true love.
Oh, I assume that was a guy.
Oh, could be a guy. I thought it was a woman dressed as a man. But it could be either, you're right. It's very androgynous.
My true love's imprisoned in a high tower and I have to set him free.
But we see it is a woman in the final panel.
Oh.
Of that page.
The person that walks by, yeah.
That's the person that gave her the coin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is like a mythology thing that the lover is imprisoned in a high tower, that they have a brass fish that will sing his guards to sleep, an acorn that will grow a ladder in a moment, and if they plant it and water it with their own tears, and a comb that will turn into a forest if they pursue them.
Yeah, I don't know any references for those. I think they're just story-like ideas.
Yeah, okay.
And if you Google a brass fish that sings guards to sleep, you just find Billy Big Mouth Bass singing bass that you'd hang on the wall all over the place.
Maybe that's what they're talking about.
Maybe. And then she gets a coin, and it looks like it's from that woman who's, dressed provocatively.
And is walking by her while she sits there on the side of the street.
So I think what happened there is fairly obvious, that she's wandering the streets of LA in a daze and somebody thought that she needed help and gave her money. Oh, here you go. Have some money. And her head thought that it was this adventuring woman who said, here, take this coin.
Well, yeah, but then I also think that she is actually also experiencing this other world. Like, I don't think this is just a fantasy. I think she also is experiencing this other world. It's just manifesting itself in reality as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. But she's also seeing them, like they're manifestations of that real world. So next we've got the Cyclops, who gives her some more information. We're learning about the Kindly Ones. You don't call them the Furies. They don't like it.
That the gods are afraid of them.
And even the gods are afraid of them. They're older than the gods. They came before them. But the Cyclops is the crosswalk lamppost. Right? So they're kind of both. I don't know how true it is. I don't think that the crosswalk is actually a Cyclops.
No, but I think that she's experiencing the real world and a dream world in tandem.
Yeah.
Like that the two worlds are connected. And so when she wanders through the underground of LA, she is at the same time wandering through this mythical world with these mythical beings who are helping her on her way.
Although I don't think, we haven't seen Delirium, but this is more Delirium's realm than Dream.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think Neil very specifically doesn't have delirium here because I don't want any, I don't, I think he wants nobody to think that this has to do with delirium. I think this is her own thing. I think
it's also the realm of that she's in some way related to this ancient Greece and like the mythology of ancient Greece and all of that. So I think that this is almost its own realm, like where her power comes from too.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Yeah. I think it's kind of, I think it's all of that. I think that's the thing that, that the Sandman does a lot, talking about there are different truths and different ways of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And Leetah, I think, certainly lives in multiple worlds.
Well, isn't the first time he's explored the idea of the streets of a place, like the homeless and the people living on the fringes having a second world that they interact with that the other people can't have access to, right? That's basically the whole plot line of Neverwhere.
Mm-hmm.
That the London Underground, if you're homeless, is a completely different world.
Right, yeah.
And when you're in it, you can't get back into the rest of the world. You're just always going to be seen as a person on the fringe.
This is really driven home that it's the same world on page 10 where she meets Puss in Boots, because each of the panels lines up really, really well with the background.
Mm-hmm.
Behind it, not totally perfectly, but like lines all meet up where they need to meet up, tops of roof become branches, branches become just the sides of buildings that go around a window.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they're not direct correlations, but it's just the way that a mind could see them.
Yeah, it's close enough
and could connect them. Yeah, really cool stuff here.
So the Cyclops is under an enchantment. She's waiting until the seventh son of the seventh son comes, carrying a white rose and a golden whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'll return to her true form to be reunited with her seven poor sons and her faithless husband, the king.
Yeah. Seventh son of a seventh son is a very popular thing in folklore, said to basically be the source of either lots of magic or power, or in some cultures, cursed to be a werewolf.
Mm. Cool. So I didn't realize this was Puss in Boots. I thought this might have been Bast.
Oh, no, it's Puss in Boots. And that's absolutely the Puss in Boots story. Owned by a shape-changing ogre, trick it into shape-changing into a mouse. Puss eats the mouse ogre and then takes over the castle and marries the princess.
Nice.
Yep.
Way to go, Puss in Boots.
Yeah, good job. And then in the final panel, we see that is literally a cat.
Mm-hmm. Well, the cat showed up in the last panel of the final page, approached her when she was...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
There, yeah.
And over the page, we see Rose Walker having a dream.
And the dollhouse is in it.
Oh, there is the dollhouse, yeah. She's having sex with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Look who's watching and eating popcorn.
In the corner, it's Abel.
Yeah.
He's very awkward about it, too.
I am not really here. He is, and it's creepy, but at the same time, dreams are supposed to be creepy, so he's kind of doing his job. But you're supposed to have nightmares where you're having sex and somebody sees you. And so when you have that nightmare, a nightmare needs to do that.
Yeah, but Abel's not a nightmare.
He is a nightmare. He kind of is, anyway. He works for Dream.
I guess.
He shows up in dreams and nightmares.
Yeah.
I guess it depends on if he was like, I'm gonna sneak in on somebody, or if they're like, time to go be in a dream, and he shows up there and he's like, okay.
Mm.
I don't know. To me, it's his intent.
Mm. Anyway, Rose Walker wakes up.
And Carla's there. And it turns out Rose was the babysitter.
Yeah. Her hair's different.
And she has a Tori Amos poster on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And another one that is probably Iggy Pop. Mm-hmm. It might be like Ziggy Stardust or just the comic book character Ziggy, but I think it's Iggy is what that poster is. There is an open CD case on the couch there.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can actually see enough detail on the next page over to know that it's Tori Amos's Under the Pink CD.
Huh.
We're on page 13, bottom left panel. You can see it says, Are the Pink.
Cool.
Tori and Neil are friends.
Mm-hmm.
And on panel 4 of page 12 here, the poster in the back is The Man. And that's a character from the comic series Breathtaker, which was written by Mark Wheatley and drawn by Mark Hempel, who's the artist for this issue.
Oh, so he snuck his own art in.
Yeah, just threw one of his own characters in there.
That's cool.
Yeah, Breathtaker is really good. I think you'd like it quite a bit.
So Rose describes what she was dreaming about and that it was her ex that she was sleeping with, whom we don't know who that is, right? We never...
I don't think we do know.
She didn't date anyone during the thing we read, so that would have been after. Mm-hmm. And that when she got caught, like, the guy peeping on her, she felt betrayed, which is kind of an interesting thing to feel. Like, she feels extra betrayed because she knows the dreams are kind of real, right? She, because of what she went through, she knows that mm-hmm. the dreaming world, like... She knows that Abel is a real person who chose to watch her in her dreams. Yeah, so she feels betrayed.
Yeah.
For real, in a way that you probably wouldn't feel if you were just having a dream you didn't know what dreams meant.
Right. I feel like that means she kind of knows Abel.
Right? Because Carla says, it was just a dream. And she goes, I know. I know it was just a dream. But it still means something, right?
Did she meet Abel?
No, but she knows that dreams are real, right? Because when mm-hmm. Carla says it was just a dream, she says, I know. Well, I hope his eyes fall out peeping in my fucking dream like that. Yeah. As in that it's not just, you know, like he came into my dream and peeped. Yeah. It's not just, it was all a dream.
Yeah. One of her uncle's employees.
Yeah. Creepy.
So Carla's asking about Lita.
Yeah, she feels bad about taking off when her friend was acting crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But she finds that the Lita is not up there, which we already knew, because mm-hmm. Lita's wandering around the streets.
Yeah. And we get the information again that Rose fell asleep,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's weird.
Yeah, Carla kind of goes about asking her if she was on drugs and brings up that the cops had were going to come and ask her about it, mm-hmm. but the cops never came and spoke to Rose about it.
I fell asleep, that was all. I've never fallen asleep like that. I just don't remember anything. I put him to bed, sat down. Then Lita was shaking me awake and saying Daniel was gone. That's not falling asleep.
No.
That's getting put out.
Yeah, she was put out. But yeah, it's more suspicious that the police never came to speak to her.
Yeah. And we also hear again that Rose looks very young.
Mm-hmm.
She's 25, almost 26, and everybody thinks she looks really young.
Yeah.
Could be that she ages very slowly because she's basically a member of the Endless family, right? She's part mortal, part endless.
Mm-hmm.
Could be that her giving her heart away has made it so she doesn't age anymore.
Yeah.
Because she gave her heart to her grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that? Remember we met Mad Hetty, who lived forever because she hid her heart away?
Mm-hmm.
So that could be a continuation of that trope.
Maybe.
Because she doesn't have her heart, she's not actually aging anymore. So she still looks as young as she did when this all went down.
We see now that she's a writer, and she's mm-hmm. writing about TV series.
Yeah.
She's taping Roseanne reruns, and she tapes other shows as well. And then I guess she writes about them. Roseanne, Addams Family, Bewitched.
So it looks like Rose is actually researching the Triple Goddess. In popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
So Roseanne has the grandmother and the daughter, and Roseanne is the mother,
mm-hmm.
mother, maiden, crone. Addams Family has the same. Bewitched, the main character is the witch, her mother is a witch, and then later on in the series, they have a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the mother, maiden, crone.
Okay.
Golden Girls is about three ladies,
mm-hmm.
which we see over the next page. So she's studying the triple goddess in popular culture.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
The kindly ones.
Who is, who's this? Montel and Vixen LaBitch. I don't
so
get this reference.
Montel is Montel Williams. He was, he still is a talk show host of the time.
Okay.
You know, would just have who is the real father kind
so
of.
So like Maury or.
Yeah, like Maury. A little more, I think, socially conscious, but. I do also remember him having on like total shysters that he got convinced by. So I don't think I have much respect for him, but it's been a while since I've thought much about him.
Okay.
But was quite popular at the time. Vixen LaBitch seems to be a fictional character, a character made just for this.
Okay. I mean, that is a pretty wild name.
It's pretty great, yeah. And she's referencing...
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson and Billie Jean.
Prancing around telling us that the kid wasn't his son. Well, obviously, it was his boyfriend and... Beat it. So in 94, when this came out, mm-hmm. there was a lot of speculation about Michael Jackson at that point.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't know the timeline of when that kind of talk about him started happening.
Well, that's just homophobia that she's doing right there, right?
Yes, of course.
But yeah, there were claims of that. There had been parents who had claimed that he had done it, and then he had bought silence or settled or something. So Everybody just went, well, what do we do?
I just meant that I wouldn't know, because I would have been 5 years old, if at 1994, that was kind of the conversation about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Because it was a well played out joke by the time I was old enough to know what they were talking about.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know when that would have begun to be something that people talk
about.
This
would have been about the time, definitely, when, you know, he had his Never Never Land and he was hanging out with Macaulay Culkin a lot. And people thought things were weird. It just starts off as talk, right? We didn't have anywhere for that stuff to get released. Mm-hmm. Or even like as organized a celebrity information gathering as we have these days.
Okay.
It existed, but man, it's huge now.
Mm-hmm. Now, we also find out here that Rose is in town visiting a sick old friend who's terminally ill.
Yeah.
But do we have any idea who that is?
We don't yet.
No idea. Okay. Probably someone from the previous.
I would think so, yeah.
Everyone seems to be from, no one's a new character.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No one's a new character. And Rose says, I've seen Vixen's act. I'm not a fan.
Mm.
And no one's a new character, Sasha.
Seen Vixen's act and you're not a fan.
Have we seen Vixen the Bitch before?
Could that be the drag queen?
Could it?
But she wouldn't be mad at the drag queen. She liked the drag queen. Huh.
Curious. Maybe we'll find out more in the future.
Whatever happened to Barbie?
Yeah, we haven't heard from Barbie in a while.
At the end of her series, her whole world sort of ended, but then she woke up after that whole thing. Like, her kingdom disappeared, but she woke up in our world.
Yeah. But I think she woke up and felt better, didn't she? Or
maybe.
Hmm.
Hmm. We find out that Carmela is the granddaughter of an actress.
Mm-hmm.
That she's been living off of the wealth, her family wealth.
Yeah, Carmilla Bristol, also not a real person.
Oh, okay. She doesn't exist. But apparently she played every black lady's maid in every crappy Hollywood film made between 1925 and 1950.
Yeah. She didn't get to demonstrate much dramatic range, but she had a great eye for a land deal.
So she just bought real estate. She took her money and bought real estate and made herself wealthy.
She did okay and then invested well, yeah.
Yeah.
And Carla pulls out the business card for the police and it's blank.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a blank card.
I think I know who the police are.
Who are the police?
Well, we'll get to the end and I'll say, because it's going to be my prediction. I'm not going to spoil. I'm going to blow it now and have to come up with another prediction.
Okay. Carla hopes Lita hasn't done anything stupid. And over the next page.
Yeah, she's going into a cottage.
Yeah, going into a cottage and meets two sisters who look a lot like the Spider Sisters.
That's what I thought the first time. As soon as I saw them, I was like, oh, it's the Spider Sisters.
And then Chantal and Zelda.
But then that didn't make sense because they had different names.
Right. This is Steno and Uriel, who are two of the three Gorgons.
Oh.
Medusa was the third.
Oh, so they lost their sister, Medusa.
Medusa is their sister. The Gorgons and Medusa, their stories changed a lot over time. I've looked it up to try to find out what it was. For a while, the three of them were monsters, and then the Roman poet Ovid wrote a thing saying that only Medusa had the serpent hair, and it was because she had been a mortal who was the priestess of Athena, who was married to Poseidon, and Poseidon was mad at her, so he literally took Medusa on the steps against her will.
Mm.
And said, what do you think of that, Athena? And Athena said, how dare you do that with my husband, and cursed her to be a terrible monster.
Wow, that really sounds like her fault.
Wait for it. And then a little while later, along comes Perseus, the hero, who cuts her head off. Oh, you horrible monster, I'm going to cut your head off. How dare you exact revenge against people for being turned into a monster for being raped by a god.
See, I thought that she turned people to stone with her eyes, and then the way to fight her was that Perseus got that shiny shield,
mirror, yeah.
The mirror shield, and then she turned to stone.
Yeah, she was supposed to be so ugly that you turned to stone if you saw her. It's not like beams from her eyes.
Oh, so when she saw herself, she turned to stone.
I think she had to look away. I don't think she turned to stone. I think she saw herself in the mirror and was like, ah, and that's looked when away. Her head got cut off. And that allowed him to attack without her seeing it.
I'm wondering when I'm thinking of when she got turned into stone. Because that's kind of making her like a basilisk. It's kind of combining her powers with the basilisk to make her. But it might have been in the Hercules Legendary Journeys, where Kevin Sorbo's Hercules basically took on a bunch of other Greek myths. Like, they all got attributed to him instead of just doing the regular trials of Hercules and stuff. Yeah. He did a bunch of other ones.
Nice.
Also, they left out the bit where he kills his whole family in that one, too.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Took that out, I think. Didn't make him a very redeemable character.
So we're back. Let's get back to the sisters here.
Yeah, they're creepy. They got these shrouds. Can't see their faces. And they seem to want to keep Leda around.
Yeah, they want to replace their lost sister, right? That's what it seems like. And Leda doesn't understand what these statues are. Did you carve them yourselves? Oh, please. Would you like to be our sister? He cut off her head. He was a stranger. We wanted to bury it with her, but he carried it off with him. There should be three of us. You could be the mortal one.
You're welcome to stay here for a night and a day and another night. Wonder what that means. Is that like, if she stays for that long, then that's how she'll become one of them?
Yeah, I don't get that reference. I feel like it's just a story thing, a story trope.
But they do tell her where she can get some food.
Mm-hmm.
She heads out to the garden, and she goes to the tree at the very, very top of the garden, where the apples are golden, and there's a three-headed serpent.
Mm-hmm.
Eagle, Erythia, and Arethusa? Did I say that right?
If you see Eagle, Erythia, and Arethusa, I think?
Yeah.
Those are the Hesperides. They're another trio of women from Greek myth. Retrieving apples from their garden was one of the labors of Hercules. And in some of the tales, the Gorgons did actually live near the garden.
Hmm. Those three characters, what do they do in Greek mythology? Like, what's their place?
They're nymphs of the evening and golden light of sunset.
Okay.
They were called the daughters of the evening or nymphs of the west. They tend a beautiful garden in a far western corner of the world.
So they know what Leda's name is. Hippolyta, also Antiope, queen of the Amazons, given to marriage by Hercules to Theseus.
Theseus.
Theseus. Say all the vowels. And then Hall, a corridor between places.
Mm-hmm. And then here's why I kept saying maybe it's Hippolyta, because he says Lyta, less dark, yes?
Because it's light.
Lyta. It's getting Lyta out.
But it's also less dark than the story of Hippolyta, too, right? It's a new name with some lightness as opposed to that other name that's...
I guess, yeah.
You know...
Yeah.
Queen of the Amazons.
I suppose. It's just a name.
Are these apples from the Bible?
These, not a bit. Quite useless for knowledge of good and evil. More like the other tree, you know.
No.
So in Greek myth, they actually don't confer immortality. Norse myth does feature golden apples in that role.
Mm.
In most versions of the story of the golden apples, the guardian is called Ladon and had as many as 100 heads. The three-headed Chiron was slain by Hercules, but in a different labor.
Mm.
But it looks like they've been kind of pushed here together just so that he could have the number three again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so these apples take away your mortality because it's the tree of life that she's at. So I guess they're kind of implying that this garden is also the Garden of Eden, but it's also the other gardens, that all the gardens are sort of the same.
I think so, yeah.
And that when asked, why did he throw them out? Who, nice couple, fig leaves, Adam and Eve. And so why did he expel them? She says, why did God expel them from the Garden of Eden? Because they disobeyed him, I suppose. And the Geryon says, not a bit. Scared they would find the tree of life next and eat and live forever. Genesis 3:22.
Yeah.
So it's not that he threw them out because they ate the apples and disobeyed, but it's because if they had kept going around eating things in that garden, they would have gotten to the point where humanity would have been forever changed. Humanity would have become mortal, immortal or something like that, instead of the way that he wanted them to be.
Yeah.
Or she wanted them to be. Or they.
And then she eats it.
and we're transported to where she actually is.
Yeah, eating a garbage apple.
And what's that above her, looking down at her?
A little lizard.
A lizard?
Gecko? Lizard? But I guess they have those in L.A.
It's a pretty big lizard.
It is pretty big.
I don't know what kind of lizard that's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Probably the lizard from the title page.
I guess so.
Mm-hmm.
Showing you that not everything is artificial, I guess. And then Dream completes his crafting project.
Yeah, so he's got a second one of those little heads. So he had the one that he was carrying.
Yeah.
And then he, I guess, had a second one in the chest.
So he goes to the chest. The one in the chest is the one from the original Corinthian,
mm-hmm.
right? He unmade him and then picked up the little skull.
And so now he's got two.
Yeah.
Collector's edition.
But then he puts them together.
Yeah, into one.
So the new one and the old one together into one.
Storms are coming.
And we see Merv. That's how you get volcanoes in your dreams. Merv has to wheel it over in a cart.
Well, something I didn't notice on my first two reads of this issue mm-hmm. is that at the bottom of page 20 here, he's standing in the window. The window is mm-hmm. that shape.
Yeah.
And then we see out of that same shape is Merv with the volcano walking.
On the beach, yeah.
And we have storms are coming in Dream's voice.
Yep.
And then we're transported to where Merv is.
Yeah, and we can see the castle that Dream is in far in the background.
Yeah, I didn't notice that the first two read through. I didn't notice that the shape of the panel square changed specifically to look like the window that he was looking out of.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. And it also explains how Dream gets there just from behind. He doesn't actually come out of nowhere.
No.
He basically steps out that window and flies down to the beach.
Yeah, he's waiting to ambush.
I think he just took his time.
I think he just chills on the periphery until he hears Merv talking spicy probably. About him, and then he shows up just to mm-hmm. scare him.
And we get to meet Abuda.
Mm-hmm.
Abuda was in issue 22, page 7, panel 4, when Dream gathered a bunch of the nightmares together. Abuda was one of them.
Ah.
Just not even named, I think, but definitely him.
He doesn't say much.
I
am Groot.
And all the boys find out that the one girl's gone.
Yeah, and we've got a different take on it from two characters. So both Matthew and Lucien are sad that she's gone. They liked mm-hmm. having her around.
Yeah.
Lucien liked that she sang and he could hear her songs all over the place and they stuck with you.
Yeah.
But Merv... Merv doesn't seem to mind her being gone.
Dames, who needs them?
Merv, you say some amazingly dumb things sometimes.
Nah, I just call them like I see them. For example, saw the fashion thing a couple of days back wearing a dress that left absolutely nothing to the imagination. Wouldn't catch me dressing like that.
Yeah.
Nope, they aren't like us.
Well, they aren't like you.
You're telling me. Of course, tall, pale, and interesting still expects some of us to haul volcanoes around in this kind of weather. What I want to know is what's crawled up his butt and died.
I do not believe that our lord is unusually disturbed about anything in particular, Mervin.
No? Then what's this weather all about, then? I tell you, I've never known it like this.
Merv?
First you get the winds, then the cold, and then the sky just kind of spits. Like it's gonna rain, and it doesn't rain, and the clouds are black, and they don't storm, and they don't rain, and they don't go away.
Merv!
You ask me, he's heading for big trouble. You gotta love him, sure, but the guy's a complete...
Mervin!
A complete what, Mervin?
just a complete boss.
Completeness is a virtue, Mervin, is it not? Whatever, boss.
I love his little face.
I know, yeah.
So Dream sends Mervin and Abuya? Abuda sends them off on their way with the volcano.
Mm-hmm.
He goes for a stroll with Lucien and
Muhammad ain't going to come to the mountain, all that. Muhammad won't come to the mountain, and the mountains must come to Muhammad. And that's what Mervin is doing.
By moving a volcano.
Yeah. I love this line from Dream here about Mervin.
It has always been the prerogative of children and half-wits to point out that the emperor has no clothes. But the half-wit remains a half-wit, and the emperor remains an emperor.
Dream understands the need for a jester who says, occasionally, annoying things. But he's also okay with it because he knows I'm still in charge, no matter what he says.
Yeah, Merv isn't going to actually rally a revolution against him.
Yeah.
He's not, Merv never changes anyone's mind about Dream.
Yeah.
Like, never does his complaining make anyone less loyal to Dream.
We learn that even though the weather is an aspect of Dream, Dream is kind of an aspect of the place as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the weather is because he's on edge, but it also puts him on edge because they're kind of the same thing.
Hmm. So he walks them up to his creation.
Mm-hmm. It's the Corinthian in a nicely fitted shirt.
Mm-hmm. With a cool haircut and some sunnies.
Mm-hmm. Corinthian's always kind of liked good shades, it seems.
So he walks up and he sticks that little skull inside the Corinthian's head.
And he's back. Thank you, my lord. It's good to live once more. I await your command.
And that's it.
And that's it.
Boom, 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 boom. You want to hear my prediction?
Okay, what is your prediction? What was your prediction for last... Oh, your prediction last episode was that Leda was going to go get Dream.
And that Nuala was going to help them figure out the aspect of that it's Puck related
right.
to it, that Nuala was going to help with that. Okay, so that hasn't happened yet, but that could still happen.
But it hasn't not happened. You're totally right.
Yeah, it has not happened either. So, you know, pending approval. So my prediction right now is that the cops are Puck and Loki in disguise.
Okay.
That's why their names disappeared off the card, essentially. That's why their card became blank afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And why they showed up with the picture of the burnt kid, and why they never went to question Rose, because they're not real cops, because they're actually those two characters in disguise.
And they're the ones who took Daniel.
Yeah.
So they're covering up for themselves.
Yeah.
It's a good guess.
Yeah, that's my prediction.
Okay.
Bad boys.
Any extrapolations from that? What's going to happen when we find out? How are we going to find out?
Wait, I got a song. Bad boys.
How are we going to find out?
What you going to do when lighter comes for you? Bad boys.
How are we going to find out?
How are we going to find out what they are?
Yeah.
By reading and listening to the next episode.
But what's going to happen? Like, how...
We're going to find out by liking and subscribing to us. So, okay. No, I'll be serious. How are we going to find out what they are?
In what way will it be revealed to us as an audience that is Puck and Loki?
I think they're going to tease it a little more first.
Okay. So we're not going to find that out next issue?
No, I think that's like a long game thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when it does get revealed, how will it happen?
I don't know.
Okay. You don't know. All right, that's enough then. I guess we're going to have to find out.
Yeah, by liking and subscribing.
Next episode.
You've been dreaming of The Sandman, issue 60, The Kindly Ones, part 4. For show notes, visit thedreaming.motivedust.com. Support future episodes at patreon.com/thedreaming, and we'd sure appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us. Our theme music is Oneri by Kai Engel. Hear more at kaiengel.bandcamp.com. The Dreaming was recorded in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada, on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Kikate, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. I'm Joe Foljam. Thanks for listening. Time to wake up.
Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when Leda comes for you? Bad boys. What you gonna do? Leda's super strong. She gonna pound you into glue.
Yeah.